Get ready, golf lovers. The boys are teed up and ready to go. Backspin, thanks to Inside Golf.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Backspin, brought to you by Inside Golf, Australia's most read golfing publication. My name is Larry Canning. Gary Barter is sitting right next to me. Andrew Bunce is across the ocean of buttons, as we always refer to. US Open coming up. Gary, some would say the US Open is the most wanted, most needed, most valued major. I think the British Open is, but I think US Open's a pretty tight second. Your thoughts on Shinnecock, Gaz? Your thoughts on the US Open in general? How do you see it panning out this week?
It's an amazing golf course, amazing venue. Brooks won there last time. I was there last time. It's all you want from a golf course. Last time it was right on the edge. As far as just green complexes and the speed of the greens and how hard and firm the golf course was, and it was very windy. So it was that perfect storm. Why it played super, super difficult. This year, apparently a little bit greener, not as fast, but traditionally the wind will come up. Still an incredible test. Fairways, they're saying, aren't super narrow, but you still are going to have to play golf around there. I think it's going to be probably, you know, a good iron player's course, great chipper and putter's course. You know, I think Cam Smith, after that good finish at the PGA, will go in with a lot of confidence. And you're looking at, you know, obviously the Scheffler, Rory, that we've got our tips coming up for that.
Keep them to the end though, guys.
Yeah, so we've got to figure out what to do there.
Because we're going to be hearing from one of our good friends, Tony Meyer. We know Tony is the head of operations and player strategy for Ripper Golf Club team. Obviously, Cam Smith is playing, Lucas Herbert's playing in the US Open. So we're going to be hearing about the golf course because Tony is there in New York.
Oh, well, he'll give us a good insight into that.
He spent the day on the course, I believe, today, and he'll give us a bit of an idea of how Cam Smith is playing, because we can see that there's an amazing improvement, almost dramatic, well, since joining
Team Harmon.
Sir Claudius Harmus. Claude Harmon III, actually. He's teaching out of Hogwarts, isn't he? He's the Hogwarts Golf and Country Spa.
Yeah, he's highly respected. Obviously, he's worked with Brooks for years, Dustin Johnson for years.
There's got to be a fourth coming up soon, doesn't he? Is there a fourth yet? Claude Harmon IV?
I'm not sure, but it sounds like it'd be good.
It's got to be good. It's got to be good for a fourth, isn't it? He'll have a good action.
He'll definitely have a good knowledge base, that's for sure.
So we'll be talking to Tony. We're also, just before we go on further about the US Open, also talking to our good mate Grant Booth, our intrepid traveller on the USPGA Latino...
All-America's Tour.
All-America's Tour, it's called now, because it includes Canada, now, doesn't it? And he's just played four or five or six events or something in the South American part of that, the Latino American part of the All-America's Tour. And he had some great stories about caddies and bus rides, and he's, I think he's going to be in a van. We're not sure, in a van on his way to an airport.
Yeah, so he's just finished.
Hopefully gets to the airport.
Yeah, just finished the current tournament.
It was an Australian in a van finished in Colombia. Makes me nervous. You know, he could have, you know, a gun to his head or something.
It doesn't sound that nice, does it?
It doesn't. Anyway, no. Hopefully we'll be talking to Grant. Back to US Open, guys. So we'll get that information about how the golf course might suit some players and not some others when we talk to Tony. But leading up to it, I agree totally. The golf course is it's a perfect US Open layout, they reckon. And there's been a number of US Opens there. And as you said, Brooks Koepka, when no one broke par in 2018 because it was near unplayable. In fact, it went over the edge. I think what they said, they lost the course. That was the criticism by some of the players. Because it just dried out so much, they couldn't keep a ball on the green. And with that famous episode where Phil Mickelson was hitting a putt and it was nearly going off the green and ran behind it and nudged it back towards the hole while it was moving. I mean, US Opens have got to be like that, I suppose. That's what makes them different. That's what makes them watchable. USGA always defend it by saying, we're trying to identify the best player, not trying to embarrass anyone. I must get on the edge, but it does sound like it might be a little fairer this year. Just looking at the odds, you can imagine that Scottie Scheffler is ridiculous odds. $5 he's paying. Rory next at 12. This is in CBS Sports. John Rahm, 13, Tommy Fleetwood, the usual suspect. Xander Schauffele is showing some form, guys. He had a reasonably bad, we'll say after he won all those majors, had a pretty bad 25, didn't he? But he had injuries, didn't he?
Yeah, like he's definitely coming back to form. There's no doubt about it. He's driving the ball better. He's putting a bit better. Yeah, so he looks like he's getting his game back.
And the fact that he's a major, two-time major winner. I mean, it has to be so much easier to win a major when you've got two already in the trophy cabinet.
That's the bit that's undervalued. I always think, you know, when I'm giving a tip to win a major, can that player get it in the clubhouse? Like even Bud Cawley was interviewed today. He had his first win after 260-odd starts. Mm. And the first thing he said, that was so hard.
Yeah, it's a great story.
That was so hard. Even a guy like him, who's just an amazing player, and the Canadian Open's a huge event.
Mm.
But then you're looking at a major is another...
Yeah.
It's another level again.
Absolutely.
Which is what surprised me with Aaron Rye at the PGA. I kept watching that coverage and I thought that was amazing for him to be so measured, so sort of stoic coming in. For a guy that wasn't a prolific winner, to just look the way he managed his game, managed his emotions, it was quite incredible.
Well, JJ Spornish, same sort of natured guy, winning one of the biggest tournaments in the world.
Yeah, but even JJ had had a few wins.
He nearly won the Players, didn't he?
Yeah, so that was incredible from Rice. So this event's the same thing. When you talk about the usual suspects, they definitely have that belief in that last nine holes to get in the clubhouse for sure.
I'm looking at the list here and the highest ranked non-major winner, Tommy Fleetwood, is 20s, and Ludvig Åberg, another non-major winner to this point, is 22s. Can they get over the line? Cameron Young, there's another one at 22. Can they get past that that barrier that is the first major winner and win this US Open?
Well, I think they're the perfect ones that will do it because their pedigree is so good and they've been there so many times. They would definitely have what it takes. There's no doubt about it. And you look at Fleetwood's coming into the tournament in form.
Isn't he? Yeah.
You know, I've sort of been looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, Fitzpatrick is coming in.
Mm.
I looked at Hovland. So Fitzpatrick second today, Hovland about fifth today in Canada. I looked at their ball striking. They both gained four or five shots on the field.
Right?
Strokes gained ball striking.
Is that right?
Approach.
So Fitz is still hitting it that well.
And the other guy that I think's going to be a roughie, who played a couple of practice rounds with Matt in 2018, was Ryan Fox.
Ah,
and I looked at Ryan Fox today in Canada. I think he finished up there again as well, like fourth or fifth.
Yep.
And I looked at his ball striking. And all of those guys are coming into this US Open with good ball striking, strokes gained, approach to green, which is a big factor
huge.
Coming into this event. And you're looking at Fox at 150-1. You're looking at Hovland about 60-1 and Fitzpatrick probably 25-1. Fitzpatrick's won the US Open. He's been playing great. Like he won just recently.
Mm.
They're the guys I'm looking at outside. Yeah, you look at Scheffler and McIlroy again. Like, you know, me having a bet, and not that we're advising anyone to have a bet, you know, I'll put $10 on somebody. And for me to put $10 on someone playing $6.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
No. Like it's not even worth it. So I'm looking for value.
I'll take 10 out of Sandra's purse. She won't know. So it's definitely worth it then. But I'll give her a kiss when I come home. You know, I'll do the right thing. God, guess I wouldn't be, you know. Not like that. You've got a tip, Gary, and it involves playing golf in the winter, which when the air is cold and it's harder to get the ball to stay in the air. It's come sort of on the back of me having a bit of a, not really an equipment trial, I wouldn't say it was a review, but I noticed it's getting a bit cooler down here in the Highlands, and my little nine holes that I play once a week, I've tried a couple of different golf balls to see if I can get one to stay in the air a bit longer. So it's sort of attached to that trial that I've had with the Titleist AVX ball again. Gaz, we'll be back after this with Tony Meyer.
Thanks to Inside Golf, this is Backspin.
Tony Meyer is the head of performance, as I said in the intro, and player strategy of Ripper Golf Club. He's on the line, Gaz. G'day, Tony.
G'day, Laz and Gaz.
How are you, mate?
In New York, mate.
I'm good.
How is New York? Is it nice this time of the year?
It is, yeah. It's looking like it's going to be a good week. Mid-70, as they call it over here, Fahrenheit, which is sort of 25 degrees. So it should be nice, and the course is looking great.
Obviously, Gary, we have Cam Smith about to play the US Open. Tony is there with Cam because of his role in Ripper Golf, and he looks there, and they're very close friends. Tell us about the course. Now, you've been out there today, your time. Our time is morning the following day. Just tell us about Shinnecock, because we're hearing that the fairways are like 40 metres wide. The scores might be a bit more gentle. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, it's definitely generous off the tee. It's going to be a second shot golf course. So I think the players who, you know, do well with the approach shots are going to do well. I think it's still super challenging, like in and around the greens. The course is quite softer than everyone was expecting, but I think it'll firm up a lot through the week. They are expecting some rain overnight tonight, but, you know, I think it'll play pretty firm, like typical US Open, and, you know, a lot of runoffs and stuff around the greens. So it's definitely going to be tricky. I don't see super low scores out there, but I think probably lower than it was in 2018 when no one shot under par.
And I guess that's what they're fighting against, hasn't it? That was the message we're hearing from the USGA, is that we won't let that happen again. The listeners that aren't aware of what happened in 2018, they lost the course. Well, that was the criticism, that they'd lost the grass on the greens, on the fairways. It got that hard that it was near unplayable. And there's a famous video of Phil Mickelson hitting a putt, knowing that it's only about an 8 foot or 10 foot putt or something, knowing that ball is going to roll clean off the green. So he walks beyond the ball and just taps it back towards the hole, cops a two shot penalty. And it's one of the most famous incidences, I think, of a US Open golf course just going too far. And Mickelson sort of made the point, maybe not in the most professional way.
Yeah, I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there that week. And yeah, the course, obviously it was right on the edge. Mm. And it was very windy. And Tony, have they predicted wind this week?
Yeah, well, I think like where it is, obviously Long Island is quite a narrow piece of land. So it's regularly windy, and it's sort of always sort of 10 to 15 k's of wind. And I think though, certainly on Thursday, they're expecting some wind. And as you would have seen in 18, Gaz, I think so much slope on some of the greens. And, they get a little firm and fast, as they always do in the US Open. It's easy to sort of tip it over the edge, which sort of did happen in 18. So, yeah, I think they're definitely nervous about that. Like I said, the course is looking really green and pretty soft today, but you can still tell there's a lot of firmness underneath that. So I'm sure it'll play firm, and it's going to be tough because, as I just said before, the second shots into the par fours and the shots into the par threes are going to be where the tournament's won and lost.
And Cam, it'll suit him the tougher it gets. Like he obviously played well at Chambers Bay when it was right on the edge. He obviously played great in the PGA. Everyone talks about him driving the golf ball not super accurately, but I suppose at the end of the day, those green complexes, the second shots, it's great to be like a master around the greens, and it's going to be a lot of value, especially for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when the greens are firm and they're tight with those runoffs, I think that always suits someone who's got a better short game. Some of the US Open venues and US PGA venues where there's a lot of rough, it can sort of nullify a good short game just because there is a little bit more luck involved. But I do think with the width of the fairways, the way the green complexes are, I think, it does definitely set up really good to his strengths for sure.
Obviously, it's been well documented recently, Cam, cutting ties with Grant Field, his lifelong coach, like coach from a kid, now to Claude Harmon. And the third,
yeah, because there's a second and a first.
And I was obviously watching the PGA when the story broke, and you could see Claude walking down the fairways with Cam. But that may have been a honeymoon. Claude probably, he got a lot of good publicity that week in the fact that all of a sudden Cam's come back contending for a major, literally was right there with four holes to go to win that golf tournament. How did that transpire, that connection, that deciding to cut ties with Grant? Was that something that was coming for a while?
Must have been tough. It looked tough. I mean, Cam's spoken about it was the hardest thing he's ever had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, Cam continues to have a good relationship with Grant, and that's a given, the long history, they're close mates. And it was a difficult thing for him to do. And I think, as we've seen, Cam hasn't had his best golf over the last 2 years. And I think a change was something that he felt and some of those around him felt was going to be best for him. Certainly initially, I think, as you've touched on, Gaz, he's playing better and the results are getting better. I think each week's going to be a good test for that. I think certainly he's gained a lot more confidence. His iron play has improved and he's a lot more consistent. He certainly feels like he has a better feeling of where the ball's going. And I think that was something that he lost. He just had lost all confidence in terms of, the types of shots that he wanted to hit. And that's such a critical thing for players at this level. So, Claude's obviously had an incredible resume of, working with DJ and working with Brooks and many others. So he's seen major championship success before. He's out on live a lot with Dustin Johnson. So that was sort of the connection and how the sort of connection started. So certainly so far so good. I think from what I'm seeing, he's in a better place than he was certainly after the Masters. So I think we'll see more good form from him over the next few months.
Sometimes you just need a different voice.
Yeah, definitely. I think Cam's a very different human being and golfer than he was, even 5 years ago. So I think sometimes a change is like a holiday. So, and I think in this case, I think he needed to hear a different message. And like I said, so far, it's it's been a positive change for him.
How has he changed in those years, Tony? You knew him before those years, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I think as a person, he hasn't changed. And I think his values and what he stands by, and I think that sort of, you know, he's spoken about the difficulty in changing coaches from Grant. He's a super loyal person. Mm. So I think those things he hasn't changed. But, like, the reality is now he's, you know, much more well-known and, you know, there's a lot of scrutiny in the media around, you know, how he plays and his motivation levels and all those sort of things that can make it super challenging. So I think, you know, and he's a dad now and a husband, and so, you know, things change and you evolve as a person. And to Gary's point, I think, you know, with that comes fresh challenges and a need for new voices and new personnel from time to time. So I think that's certainly the case here.
For the purest golf technicians listening, can you explain any of the moves or changes or drills that he's doing since joining with Sir Claude Harmon III?
He's always struggled where the hands get out early in the takeaway and the club gets inside. And so then we see he sort of gets out of sequence and a little bit long in the backswing, and he finds it difficult to match it back up, and with the longer clubs, particularly the driver. So Claude's worked a lot on that first part of the takeaway and trying to get the club more online, a little bit shorter on the way back. They've been doing a lot of work in terms of the positioning of that. So they've got a few different ways that they're doing that. And, yeah, like I said, so far it's been a positive change.
It is interesting, as you said, the scrutiny of the media. And, you know, whether you're listening to Brandel Chamblee or Paul McGinley in there.
Do you listen to Brandel Chamblee?
Oh, yeah, I just love watching that.
Tony, do you listen to Brandel?
Yeah, I'm not a big listener of the golf media, I must admit, probably just because I do find that it can be, there seems to be more negativity in the golf media than positive. So.
Oh, no, well, Brandel'll sit there and he'll analyse every player, every part of their game. He'll bring up every stat. He'll talk about their weaknesses, obviously their strengths. He'll talk about course setups, their ball flight. You know, it's obviously he can sit there in that place. And obviously Brandel played the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he won.
And
he,
you know, he's obviously got credibility inside the ropes, but he divides people. There's no doubt about that.
I don't think it's dividing them in half either.
No, but what's interesting about what Tony was saying is if you look back at Ballesteros, like, did the media love the way that he would play the game and he would hit recovery shots that were highly skilled, and he would hit chip shots that were highly skilled, and he would make putts under pressure. It wasn't really talked about how crooked he hit the golf ball. It was almost like a badge of honour that Seve could come from two fairways wide. And Jordan Spieth played his career like that, didn't he, Tony? But now it's this amazing scrutiny on Cam's driver. Mm. You know, it seems to be this thing that they keep pigeonholing. Mm. But ultimately, if you look at the game in totality and you look at all the skill level that he's got over and above one particular shot, as most people don't realise, when they talk about a player hitting it crooked off the tee, it could be just left rough, right rough, it could be right fairway bunker. It's not like hitting the ball and reloading four times around. So it's probably not as bad as what's painted. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think also too, I think there's been scrutiny over Cam's, how, you know, whether you call it dedicated or motivated or how hard he's working. And I think that's the thing, like, I see him all the time and I can say categorically that, you know, he's working as hard as anyone and wants to win golf tournaments as much as anyone. So I think, you know, those things as well, it's interesting, you know, how that's reported and the challenges that you know, puts on these golfers. So, but you're right, I think it's easy to bring out the same stuff all the time and not focus on the positives. And I think Cam does an exceptional job of being able to put that to one side and focus on what he needs to, which is getting better every day.
He does have opinions too, though, doesn't he? I mean, with the media, he's good value for an interview. He doesn't shrink and shirk away from a tough question, like when he was talking about the Australian Open and the fact that it was men's and women and all abilities, and his thoughts were definitely echoed across the Australian media, what his thoughts, when they weren't totally negative, they were just his explanation of things. So he's good value like that. He's, you know, he's learnt that, Tony, in those years you've been talking about, when he's matured as a person and a parent and a husband and stuff. That's definitely part of that, isn't it? Because that's an art. You must have seen people bugger that up. Yeah, the art of trying to divert away from a really shitty question and be, you know, sensible and polite and come back with something.
I think one thing I know for sure is Cam cares passionately about Australian golf promoting the game and it being positive. And that's, you know, having more kids playing and having a successful Australian Open. And that's something he feels positive about. And he wants to have an influence over those things. He wants to help. He knows he's in a position where he can help. And you know, saying nothing often doesn't help. So I think that's something that he has been incredibly good at, but that can upset some people.
If you aren't sure of how passionate he is about Australian golf, you had to be there the day he walked off the 18th green at Royal Queensland after knowing he'd missed the cut for the Australian PGA a couple of years ago. I wrote a piece on it. He was gutted. You know, it meant so much to him, and he knew how much it meant to the tournament. He, you know, his photo was all around Brisbane. Big cardboard Cam Smith at stoplights and, you know, lights and stuff. And, you know, he was gutted. And I thought, geez, you know, everyone needs to know about that just to stop questioning whether this guy's committed to Australian golf or not, because he is. He's
full. Well, I think there's a perception with Adam Scott that he doesn't work that hard, but he works harder than just about anybody. You know, Adam's got this beautiful natural swing. He's, you know, he takes 3 weeks off, goes back to Switzerland or the Bahamas and relaxes, or goes surfing. Or the reality is he's unbelievably dedicated. So it's just a perception, and you know, we know that that's at this level they can't be like that.
Absolutely.
So, Tony, LIV Golf, we have to talk about that, of course. It's one of the biggest pieces of news this year was the Saudi Arabian pulling the PIF fund on LIV Golf. There's now rumours, and I know you can shoot these down or not, that it may not even get to the end of this year, that may not be another tournament at all. I know you the players and the staff, you know, are sort of not completely in the business side of the loop, but how do you see it panning out, mate, this year?
Yeah, look, I think one thing I know for certain is that the LIV Golf product, for those who've been out to the tournaments and been able to experience LIV Golf themselves, know that it's an incredible product, an incredible live event. So I think, you know, it would be an incredible shame if it wasn't part of the golf ecosystem. I think, you know, as we've just sort of touched on with other sort of reporting of different things within the golf ecosystem, I think, you know, some of those things feels to us like are over-exaggerated. I know the players are excited for the rest of the season. The executive is super excited for the rest of the season, and everyone's confident that, you know, all the events that are scheduled will go ahead as planned. So, yeah, I don't think there's no concern from the players' side or staff side that there's not going to be the events that are scheduled to go ahead.
We spoke about LIV Golf, and I've been fortunate to go to many, many events over the last few years. We spoke about it in one of our recent podcasts, how it is an incredible live event. Like, it's when you're physically there, obviously we saw it in Adelaide, I've seen it in other parts of the world. The actual product, the quality of the golf, the quality of the tournament, just all the services of the tournament, but it just has a disconnect on the TV coverage. Like, I'll watch LIV on the coverage and I just don't get the same feeling of when I'm there. And it seems to me that that's been the battle, is to get that feeling across, or that profile, whether it is the shotgun start, whether there's a bit of a disconnect in the coverage going from player to player, where someone at home can't really see the continuity of the way the tournament's playing out. Or what do you think, looking at the coverage?
Yeah, I do think that LIV Golf is at its best when you're at the venue and you're seeing it live. And I think
it's incredible.
You know, it's been said. Yeah, and I think it's been said before. I think, you know, LIV's still very young, and, you know, I think it's fourth or fifth season. And, you know, like the golfers, we should always be looking at ways to improve it. And I think there's absolutely ways that, you know, LIV Golf can improve. And, you know, one of those potentially is the broadcast and being able to, you know, highlight the players and highlight the team's format better. But, yeah, look, overall, as I said, I think it's an incredible product that's great for world golf, but particularly outside of the US, for countries like Australia South Africa. You know, Mexico City is an incredible event. Korea, where we just were a couple of weeks ago, is incredible. And so I think, yeah, that's where, like I said, we've got to keep focusing on looking at ways to make it better. And yeah, it would be an incredible shame for golf if it wasn't to continue beyond this year.
And as far as moving forward, is it just up to investors to come in and keep it going? Is that what it all boils down to? It comes into new money coming into it?
That's certainly what they're looking for at the moment, and this, what's being reported to us, is that there's certainly a lot of positive conversations being had in terms of new investment. I certainly feel confident that they'll be able to get investment. What that looks like and how that changes the structure of the league will be the unknown, but I think certainly I'm confident that they'll get investment and will play beyond this year.
Just to finish on LIV Golf, it is easily the most criticised thing in golf, isn't it? But it's so easy to hang shit on LIV Golf.
Oh, well,
Americans, a PGA Tour, when this happened, it's just become like, you know, wow, we told you so, this sort of crap. It really annoys me how heavily criticised.
Well, it's such a good product, and it became a battle of us against them.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
As Tony said, instead of growing the game, and which LIV has clearly done, it's taken golf around the world.
Oh, of course it has.
Whereas the PGA Tour really haven't done that. And to take those quality of players all around the world, whether it's young kids, whether it's any golfing fan, to be able to see the quality of those players in all different parts of the world. And the sad bit for me is that the PGA Tour, the press, getting back to Brandel, are just more about us against them and about... Yeah, it's sort of like they're the schoolyard bully.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the end, golf is going to lose out, as Tony was saying. It'd be a shame for golf not to be part of the LIV Golf, not to be part of the golfing ecosystem.
Well, look what it's done to the PGA Tour.
It's helped the PGA Tour. It's all the players should be happier. They've improved their purses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
they've improved their quality of golf, all their payment structure, all because they had to.
They had to
looking at all those other players that went to LIV, and to keep our players, we better start providing better services.
And now there's talk that they actually are losing money, or they're not making as much money as they need to. So they're going to drop the tournament schedule down from what is it, 40 something to 27 events there. And this is all a result of LIV. And there's now an announcement that the PGA Tour are going to be involved in the Australian Open. Don't tell me that didn't come from LIV Golf going to Adelaide and igniting the whole bloody flame, and then Rory, of course, coming down for the Australian Open, and they'll be playing the Australian Open on some of those courses, the course that they're building in Adelaide. So, you know, this is all a result of, oh, I'll finish with this, and we could move on to anything, actually, rather than LIV, because it gives me the shit so badly that when it's criticised. Golf is in a way, way better place in this country because of LIV. In any way you can design that to the PGA Tour's involvement with the Australian Open now, the Rory coming down, but all that stuff, that influence was influenced by
Adelaide. Look at the numbers they get in Adelaide.
Unbelievable.
Better than any other numbers in Australian golf history. Yeah. It's like, you know, someone puts three aces and two kings down and they go raw flush. There's a strange disconnect for me on the coverage. Got any good young kids coming through, Tone? Any players over there any of our Aussies that you like?
I think Elvis Smiley, it's not probably an obvious. I think he's our next best really good one. I think he's going to be very good.
I saw him, he hit 63 greens out of 72.
Oh, wow.
This week in Asia in the International Series event.
In Morocco, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
36 of the last seven or something.
He had something like, I counted it, he had something like 117 putts. Like if he had have had 31 putts around, he would have won.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. Like, I was quite interesting because he obviously gets talked about as, you know, obviously putting the eyes out of it all the time.
But, oh, he's a flusher.
But he must have hit the ball well, like really well.
Yeah. I think all the best players, as you guys both know, are incredible at hitting it out of the centre of the face.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most important things for a good player, but I've never seen anyone who hits it more out of the centre of the face than he does.
That's a big rap.
Yeah.
Mm. And well, there you go. I didn't even know that.
He'll be playing in quite a bit in Europe, no matter what happens, won't he, Tony?
Yeah, so I know he's playing. Well, he obviously played Morocco this week. He plays the Italian Open. He's playing the Scottish Open, leading into the British. So he's got a busy sort of few weeks, which would be good.
Just before you go, what about Leish, mate? Where is Leish with his... I mean, I watch him practice every year when he comes back to Australia. You don't see anyone hit it as arrow straight. Doesn't hook it, doesn't cut it. Just hits shot after shot after shot, arrow straight. It stuns me that someone can hit it that straight. How's he with his game, his decision to go to LIV? Is he all cool, all good?
Yeah, look, I think he's extremely happy with his decision. He's having a very good year. And I actually think, you know, I've potentially had this conversation with Gary before, but like I think he's one of the most underrated players in terms of who we've produced. Like he's had an incredible career, like, you know, 14 or 15 international wins, you know, multiple wins on the PGA Tour. He's won on LIV. He's had a few top 10s already this year. His shot making ability and ability to hit different shots and play different shots is incredible. He's really improved his driving in the last sort of probably 3 or 4 years, which I think, you know, I think we'll continue to see him perform well over the next few years.
Tony, it's been a pleasure. We've taken enough of your time, and I know what time it is over there, so you should be going to bed and getting ready for a fantastic week at Shinnecock. If it's okay, we might have a chat with you after the US Open.
Sounds good.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for your time, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Cheers, lads.
See you, mate.
Cheers,
talk
mate.
Soon.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was great listening to Tony talk about Cam Smith, wasn't it? Getting what's behind the scenes more with Cam. He's very close to Cam Smith, as we know. Tony and Cam have had a friendship for a long time.
Fortunate to get some real insights into the real Cam Smith.
Yeah, sounds like he might be ready. US Open.
Yeah, I
could have easily won the PGA, Gaz.
I said on the last podcast he was a good roughie for the PGA, and he was right in there with four holes to go.
I do remember. We'll be back after this with Grant Booth.
You're tuned to Backspin. 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 With Larry Canning and Gary Barter.
Well, we've got Grant Booth on the phone in Bogota, Gaz.
Colombia.
Do not stop. Are you travelling in a car, in a taxi?
I'm currently in a van that one of my mates organised for us, which is nice of him.
You haven't got a hessian bag on your head, have you, Grant? You okay?
We're hanging in there. So far, we're moving in the right direction. As long as we're moving in the right direction, we're going all right.
We're looking for proof of life for Grant is in Colombia.
That's right. I've sent the signal out there so they know where I am.
What's it like getting through security there? Is it pretty easy or...?
Tell you what. I don't think they know either. Just show up and hope for the best. You know? could take 2 minutes or it could take 2 hours. Depends how they're feeling, you know. But the World Cup's on at the moment and they like their soccer, so they might be a bit happier tonight. So
yeah, okay. Good. Right. God love them. Yeah, could get them in a good mood, Grant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nice people.
So, mate, you're running 25th on the points list.
Ooh, nice.
In the PGA Tour America's point list. So you've got to get in the top 10 by the end of the season. That'll get you a Korn Ferry card, which is the goal.
Let's go, Grant.
So the South American swing is finished now, and you're off to Canada now. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we just had our sixth event, which was the last one of the South American swing.
Mm-hmm.
And, head home now, have, 6 days off, and then head to actually our next event in Wichita in the U.S., in Kansas, which is great. So we'll head there next, and we have another event in the U.S. in Minnesota, and then the remaining events will be Canada. Yeah, so a bit of change of scenery, but off to a decent start, you know. I think a lot of things are good, and, yeah, like you said, the top 10, the end goal at the end of it all. So, in a decent spot, though.
Just rattle off a few places you've been in those last six events, Grant, for us.
Well, we started off in Rio de Janeiro, pretty exotic spot. Then we went down to kind of the middle of Argentina in Cordoba, which was a beautiful journey home. It only took 26 hours to get home from there. to be fair, Argentina is a great golfing nation. They love their golf there. The course is great. So that was good. And then after that, we went to Quito, Ecuador, which is at 9,500 feet, which, you know, I bet not too many people have played golf at 9,500 feet.
Gee.
Yeah, so that's definitely a whole another animal. Not even so much the golf. It's, you know, you have your track bands and whatever where you can figure out, you know, how far the ball's going. It's honestly more so that day-to-day just managing your breathing and your sleep, you know, just keeping upright. The goal there. So we went there, and then Lima, Peru, to a different spot, and then we just were in Mexico City last week.
Nice.
Just where Lynch played as well, and the WGC used to be there, so a bit of familiarity with that, and then we just finished up here in Bogota.
What about your caddies? Have you had the same caddy?
Great caddy story last time.
Yeah.
Grant, didn't he, guess?
Well, he did. Funny deal with that this year. My old mate Miguel from last year, he couldn't quite make it to the first one. It was a bit far on the bus ride. I think he looked at the bus timetable and thought she was going to take 4 days to get there, and it's already Sunday. So he had to give that one a miss, and I said, no worries, you know. I'll see you in Argentina. So I met a guy there who caddied for me in Brazil. He was great. His name was Nelson, and I really liked him. He got in, got stuck into it, worked hard. And then I had to, of course, stay strong to my commitment with my mate Miguel from last year. So I saw him in Argentina. But then he actually got stuck. This is unbelievable. He got stuck on the way to the event in Peru. He was on a bus from Argentina to Peru. And they got stuck at a border. And I'm getting all these photos from him. He's like, amigo, I'm sorry, I can't make it. And I'm looking at these photos, and there's boulders on this freeway that's crossing the border. So they had to turn around and go back home to Argentina get home about 2 days later. So I ended up going with Nelson, who I met the first week, and he was great. He's a wonderful guy, worked really hard, and he was helpful. So it worked out for me in the end. I do feel bad for my mate Miguel.
Didn't Miguel need the money to sort of finish off his house?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, really. That's what he said after, but he's a nice guy. So hopefully something goes good for him back home, but
We'd love to get Miguel on, Grant, if that could ever happen. That'd be all Nelson.
Yeah. I think there might be a bit of a language barrier for some reason, but it would be good. If you could translate it, I reckon it'd be good.
So off to Canada, Wichita. It's America, isn't it?
Wichita yeah. next. Yeah, it's going to feel nice to land and get a rental car and, you know, kind of have that freedom back again, you know, and get back on your own kind of timeline. And, yeah, just being the US and then Canada's obviously, like, very similar to the US. So,
yeah,
I think, it's good. It's definitely, you know, the courses down here, South America, I think are really good. It's just, you know, a lot of things you learn outside of just the golf that you kind of have to deal with and manage and, you know, manage all that side of things. Definitely helps put things in perspective, though, I think.
Yeah.
Makes you, you know, grateful to be an Aussie and, you know, grateful to play and live in the US as well.
So where's your game at?
Well, I will say Gaz has got me sorted out in a few different parts of the game, which is trending in the right direction. I was lucky enough to spend a bit of time with Gaz a couple of weeks ago, which was great. So I can start the ball on a line and draw it now, so that's good. But I think the main thing, you know, moving forward, especially the rest of the season, but just moving forward in general, is just always get the wedges tighter and really just comes down to the putting. You know, I mean, it really doesn't matter how, where you're playing or how good you're hitting it. At the end of the day, you got to hit good putts and just see them go in. So, yeah, that can change quickly too, which I think is the fun part about this game. You know, like you're never that far away if you're kind of working hard. But, I think, just make a few more putts, you know, and you're kind of right there.
How many events left, Grant, this year?
So we've had 6 and we've got 15 for the season.
Oh, no.
That would make it, 9?
Oh, you're in good shape, mate, yeah.
So, Grant, I'm looking here at the leaderboard today. You've just finished in the Inter Rapidimissimo Golf Championship. You're 9 under par.
A great pronunciation there, Gary.
Thank you. You're 9 under
par. He's reading it.
And you're tied 26th at 9 under. 18 under par wins the golf tournament. Just give the listeners an insight into that golf course. Difficulty, what would you say? Like, we're looking at these scores here, and it looks like, well, the course must be that tough, but they're proper golf courses, aren't they?
For sure, yeah. I was saying, like, actually to my roommate, Ollie Osborne, he's a great golfer, he's phenomenal, but, we got finished late Friday. I just was so exhausted, because it's blowing about 25 miles an hour, and either side you're finishing on, it's wind out of the left, and you've got, as they say down here, agua everywhere you look. So, you know, you might be going along the right, but you still got to finish it off. And I played really good on Friday. I shot 4 under and hit it unbelievable. I could have made a few more putts like everyone can, but played really solid. And I looked at the board and I thought, it's amazing, like, how many 5, 6, 7 unders there still are. And it was a really tough day. Like, it was one of those courses. I would say a lot of the courses are like this. You can make a double or a birdie just as easy, you know. I would say they're more, let's say, risk-reward. And nowadays, you know, the guys I play with, I just seem to see a lot of guys hitting driver as much as they can, as high as they can, and as far as they can. And more times than not, they hit it straighter. And, you know, they kind of go find it and wedge it on the green and make a 20-footer, it seems like. So
when you and I were in Vegas, probably 2 weeks ago, I think I flew back, we had 4 days together, and you said to me, you said, look, I want to look at my pitching. You know, I want to pitch the ball closer.
Yeah.
Obviously, putting was something that you wanted to really look at that week. But the one thing that was annoying you, wasn't so much I was worried about it, but was annoying you, was that you want to hit the ball further. Like, you were saying that you're like 173, 175 ball speed, probably 178 in good conditions when it's warm. But I'm looking at you drive it, and obviously Matt Jones is there, and I'm watching you guys play golf together, and you're hitting it. It looked good to me, but you were still frustrated in the fact that, and I said to you, mate, you look like hitting it far enough to me. And tell us that story about that kid when you teed off in the final round, that 23-year-old kid from Las Vegas, that first tee shot. Just tell us about what you told me that made me think, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, no, and that's actually a perfect example. So the first hole is whatever it is. We're at 9,500 feet, so it's probably 430 yards, say, on the card. But if you hit driver, you can take it over these, like, 50-yard high trees and hit it at the green. But if you miss it at all, you're out of bounds or in a bush. So most of us normal guys just hit, like, hit a low hook 4-iron in between the trees and have, like, a 7-iron in or something. And this is the first hole of the day. This kid, Caden, he hits it great. And he gets up there, and laces this driver straight over the trees 10 yards away from him. And I hit a good fire and I clip the tree, I drop down, I get down there. I've got 210 meters to play. I've got to hit a low hook 7-iron around the tree just to get it somewhere down near the green and try and make a par. And he's got 10 yards for eagle pitch. And I thought, like, the way golf is now, you see this so much more where a kid will happily get there on the first tee at 8 a.m. in the morning and rip a driver over either a hazard or trees and hit it in a spot that you've never even thought of, you know? It's really such an advantage if you can obviously do that.
But they've got to find their ball, too,
though. Day out. You do, but I don't know. I mean, it's been pretty eye-opening. Like, actually, this week I played with a kid who hit it in places I would never thought would have been possible. Like, his 10th hole this week was maybe 420, 30 yards. And we had it downwind on Friday. He flew his driver pin high to a front right pin.
Oh, you're joking.
I'm hitting a hybrid. Well, funny enough that day, I will say, I hit hybrid 56 and holed out for eagle. So there's my once a year hole out. But he's got a 20-footer for eagle, you know? Anyway, he's high-fiving me as I'm walking up to the green, and I'm like, I've just hit the best shot I've hit in 12 months, and you could still tie me without even blinking for the hole, you know? It's just incredible, like, how many guys hit it far nowadays, like, and they're not afraid to hit driver, you know?
They're still getting longer.
That's why I just think scoring is so low. Getting longer, it's crazy, yeah.
You went from the ping driver to now the titleist driver.
Mm-hmm.
Just for everyone listening, how hard is it to get a driver that just matches up for you? Like, you guys are at the highest level. You've got the opportunity to sort of change shaft, change heads. Is that something that is still a bit of a mystery, even for guys at your level, to get that driver matched up perfect, to get the three wood matched up perfect?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it obviously helps a lot. I mean, you know, especially with driver, if you're swinging it decent at a high speed, like, every little bit makes a big difference. I think, honestly, the spin and for me, it was more the weight of the driver. I just felt like, I mean, I think the ping is a really awesome club and really straight, but it was maybe a little bit slower just because they have the weight more in the back, which makes it straighter. Yeah. But it's always like give or take in this game, I feel like. You can't just ever have perfect, you know? Whereas like the Titleist was faster for me and I felt like I could shape it a bit. But I think the biggest thing, you know, for kids playing, getting into clubs and stuff like that is like, just getting the spin right, you know, whether it's the ball or the club. But I think, you know, so much of the modern equipment is made to spin pretty low and just come out hot that, you know, it's fine, but it just becomes a little bit harder to kind of work and actually play with. Like, it's fine on driving range and a TrackMan, but then when you have to go tee it up in a tournament and you have a hole that's right to left and the next hole is left to right, you kind of start seeing different shapes. I think that's where, you know, you can't just go off numbers on a range. You really have to, like, get it out on the course and see the different flights that you can hit with it. That part of, like, equipment is still maybe underlooked sometimes, is, like, the having enough spin to hit the flights and shapes that you want.
Is that the latest one, Titleist?
Yeah, the latest one I actually haven't hit yet. I think I'm going to hit it one of these off weeks and test that out. But I've got the GTS, I think, which I think is actually probably the best driver Titleist has made. I think it's awesome. And I think last year it might have been the most played driver on tour.
Yeah, it is.
It's really good. I think they've done a great job with all their new stuff. And I think the new one's pretty similar, just maybe a little different with the where you can put the weight in the head, which obviously, again, makes a difference. But I think having the ability to just hit the flight that you want is just so important, because that gives you more confidence to swing it better, too.
Yeah, of course.
Kind of like chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah.
Well, mate, we'll continue on with you on your journey to the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, you've become a bit of a cult hero of our podcast and of Inside Golf Magazine. Yeah. Robbie Willis, the editor, loves you of Inside Golf. So, yeah, we'd love to have you on more often, Grant, if that's okay. And we love your journey, and we're going to get you on that tour, mate.
Well, you know what? Actually, it's great because you guys helped me get through these long weeks, because when a new episode comes out, I just pop it on when I'm at the range or putting or whatever, and, you know, it helps me get through the day, so.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we'll keep it all going.
Good on you, Grant. Say hello to Miguel and Nelson for us, mate.
I will. I'll send him a pigeon for you, all right?
Yeah, good on you.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Grant. Cheers, mate.
Take care, fellas.
Well, Gary, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with a tip.
Feeling hungry for a tasty tip? Here it is.
Guys, I suggested in the intro that I've been fiddling with my golf ball to try and keep it in the air a bit longer, being it's quite cool down here in the Highlands now, the middle of winter. I had a bit of a crack back with the Titleist AVX. I'm fascinated with that golf ball because I think it's perfect for my swing speed, but it flies lower and I don't get quite have the spin that I need to keep it in the air. So I've gone back to the Pro V1 X and it was good. It was I got the ball up in the air quite a bit more and spun it into the wind. Obviously a little bit of an issue, but not
so even the cooler conditions it felt better.
Well, the Pro V1 X did, yes, it because it spins more. It's a bit of a harder ball. It goes a little further, but it spins better for me. I don't have to hit the ball as hard as the AVX goes further because it runs and lands, but I can't get it to stop on a small green. How do I get the golf ball to stay in the air longer, Gaz, in winter?
So I did a Instagram tip on Saturday night, and it was on the back of me teaching on Saturday, really cold. And like at club level, you know, not everyone's 21 years of age and going to the gym and mobile. One of my students said, oh, gee, this is so hard today. It's like it's cold. I can hardly move. You know, he had a jumper on, he had a jacket on. So my tip was inspired by the fact is how do we get most bang for our buck when we don't feel like, you know, we're going to move like a 22-year-old? And it was interesting because the value that we can get by how much we can use our wrists in the golf swing. And even though on my Instagram tip, you know, I'm using some fancy words like leverage and angles and weight and time in the
You'll
swing.
You'll use fancier words than those.
Well,
I know what you're saying.
But as far as someone listening to this podcast, just the value of swinging the golf club and letting the golf club travel, that's the head of the club, travel further in the swing. Now, back in the day, you and I would have been told to turn more, you know, get the left shoulder across more. And that in itself can make us feel pretty stiff, pretty uncomfortable, especially as we get older. But you get so much more value in just letting the club head swing. So as far as that would be concerned, if you could imagine hitting some balls with your feet together, just the old-fashioned feet together, standing there, using your wrists as much as you can during the backstroke and the throughstroke.
Oh, interesting.
So the club head travelling further. The trick is that you've got to, the wrists will, they'll allow the club to swing. So it's not like you get there and try to have this violent sort of wrist action and hand pressure. You're feeling the weight of the club travel further back, travel further through. And some of the old golfers back in the day, like a Ben Hogan or a Peter Thompson, they'd almost like the club to feel like the shaft of the club's almost touching their right shoulder on the way back and their left shoulder on the way through. So once you get the value of those levers and those angles, that creates more speed without having to feel like you've got to have a lot of participation from the body turn. Then you've got weight shift. That's another huge value, as in just moving weight from right to left. Yep. If you can combine the club head traveling further on the way back with a lot more wrist hinge with a bit of weight moving from right to left, you get so much more out of the speed. And then obviously the hitting the golf ball, and you don't have to feel like, you know, you've got to go to the gym. So you get 85% probably distance from just that.
I've never associated more with the tip than that one.
Well, you know, it's like anything. It's hard to articulate these things online.
I love
online.
You, Gary.
Well, for golf anyway.
You know,
for golf.
I think I'm going beyond that.
So I would definitely suggest that.
What
just
are you doing?
Start off with I'm definitely not spending it with you. I would definitely start off just feet close together, maybe 6 inches apart, tee it up a little bit just to make it easier, grab like a 7-iron and just feel like you can clip them away. And Peter Ellis is famous for saying it's like clipping daisies away.
Yeah.
And even though that's old school, it's so valuable and you get a lot of bang for your buck.
All over that.
Yeah. You'll definitely pick up 20 yards. There's no doubt about it.
Can I sit a little bit closer?
No.
Gaz, I've got to get past that moment now of adoration. Who's going to win the US Open, mate? You're allowed a winner and someone who will probably feature. Doesn't have to be Australian.
Well, I've given my three. So my three are Fitzpatrick,
Did
Fox.
I say three?
No, but my three
but
are
I love you now, so it's three. You can have
Fitzpatrick,
three.
Fitzpatrick, Fox and Hovland. Who's going to win? Can Hovland win? He looks like he's in form. Oh, I'm going to go Fitzpatrick. And I'm going to go Fox and Hovland dead heat. Who's going to figure?
Okay.
Other than, as we said, we've barred Scheffler and McIlroy from our tips.
Yes, we have. I always go John Rahm because he's the next one down the list. But I'm not going to do it this time because I've done it too many times.
It's perfect for him, that place.
Okay, I'm going to go Rahm.
Yeah. We're going to put Cam Smith as a sentimental roughie.
I'm going to go be careful of Brooks Koepka. I sense something coming from Brooks. He's not winning yet, but I'm sensing
he's trending.
He's coming.
He's
trending beautifully, and he's a major world-beating champion. Then I'm going to go for Tyrrell Hatton, because he went for three. I'm going for three.
Yep.
He's got the grit. Got the grit to get up to win a major. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listeners, for listening to our podcast. We will be back very soon talking about who won the Men's US Open. And, of course, the Women's USPGA is on. There's a bunch of major championships on, so we might be on a little more frequently than
normal. Can Kennelly follow it up?
Yeah, good bloke, Kennelly. Yeah.
No, Nelly Korda.
Oh, Kennelly Korda. Yes, Nelly can win everything. She'll win everything. Anyway, if she can get across Hannah Green. Thank you, listeners, again, and see you soon.